Welcome to No Room for Phonies, episode 106, the day after Valentine's Day edition, because we put ours out on the 15th.
And suitingly, we're going to be talking about The Love Prescription, which is a book by John and Julie Schwartz-Gottman.
And it's called 7 Days to More Intimacy, Connection, and Joy. And my friend Rita let me know that these two have done a podcast with Brené Brown. So yes. It'd be very cool to maybe listen to that. In terms of like
they've
whatever.
Also done it with Adam Grant.
Have they?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Some of our favorites. The Gottman Institute provides practical research-based tools to strengthen relationships. It's co-founded by Drs. John and Julie Schwartz-Gottman. And they help couples directly and provide state-of-the-art training to mental health professionals and healthcare providers. So it's a whole like website.
Yes, it's very, very thorough.
It applies leading-edge research on relationships in practical down-to-earth therapy and trains therapists committed to helping couples. So, mm-hmm. And this book is really very...
It's research-based. They do.
Yes.
They do cite their own research and other people's research in the book.
And
some of their other books are a little bit more about the research. This is much more practical.
Yeah. And no other approach to couples education and therapy has relied on such intensive, detailed, and long-term scientific study of why relationships succeed or fail. So, they're very legit.
Right. They did have a podcast themselves called Small Things Often.
Oh, right. I listened to that for a while.
It's still there. They aren't producing it anymore, but there's still all the episodes out there.
Yeah.
And so it was basically like a 5-minute tip.
Well, and I just said Small Things Often. Tiny doses every day is what makes a healthy relationship. Yeah. So, but this is literally day one. Like
they go through 5 days or 7 days?
7 days. So day one is... 3 ways to make contact, turning toward, turning away, or turning against.
Right. So the strategy for day one is to make contact with your partner.
Yes. Yeah. And first of all, you have to work on friendship. And we have really said that with our kids, that when they're dating someone, it's really important that you become friends. And it's not just this hot love affair or whatever.
Puppy love.
They talk about understanding the little moments that look like nothing, because they predict happiness and relationship stability. Yeah. So
based on a lot of couples that have had or pair partnerships that have had successful long term relationships, this is one of the evidences that came through.
Obviously, you don't want to turn away or turn against. So turning toward changes the way you act during a conflict. If you pause during a fight and make a peace offering, it puts money in the other person's emotional bank account.
Yep.
So,
I think turning toward also has a lot about empathy in it. So
yes.
It's that curious listening.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're basically looking for ways to respond positively to your partner and accumulating moments of positivity and connection. And I really always like that question, is there anything that you need from me today? Instead of focusing, what are you laughing at? I just think
I'm laughing at the number of times each of us expects the other person to read our mind.
Yeah, and that comes up later.
But there's nothing wrong to come right out and asking, is there anything you need of me today? Even though that other person is probably feeling at the moment like, well, crap, you should know what I need today.
Yes, but you also have to get into the mindset that, and they talk about this later on.
All right.
But this idea of making contact and turning towards your partner. That's
and responding
the day one.
Positively.
And I will say, like in the book, there's a lot of detail.
Yes.
It's
a very, very short book.
Yes, but there's a lot of examples and details.
Very, very dense.
So number two, day two rather, is ask a big question.
And that doesn't mean the question that's
did you get the groceries?
Or 20 words long.
Not that kind of a question. Ask your partner one big question and see where it goes. A big question is an open-ended question, and there's not a dead end, and there's no yes or no answer to it.
What's for supper?
Yeah. chicken? There's no one right answer. There are many, and your job as the, is like the topographer of a map, like with a map, and just to follow your partner wherever they go. So a big question doesn't have to be serious or momentous or tackle the meaning of life, but it can keep the conversation going by asking, like, tell me more, which, interesting, that came up in the coaching book, right, that we were talking about.
And what else?
What are your feelings, your hopes, your dreams? Expand on the story that goes with your thought.
Yeah, so basically as a partner, you're being a topographer and you're looking at the landscape of your relationship. A good analogy.
Yeah, that you think you know and you really look around. What has changed? What are the blind spots in your knowledge about your partner's inner worlds? And just like you said, you're approaching with curiosity and you'll never find new things.
Right.
Like you'll never. It's just like,
you know, when you've driven the same route so many times, you start not seeing the surroundings, everything becomes.
And you arrive in your driveway and you're like, how did I,
But actually, if you look around every time, well, you can't look around safely when you're driving, but if you can look around safely when you're going somewhere, there's always something slightly different in the surroundings. So,
well, like I was driving home from St. Catharines today and I noticed that that big church where you and Zachary went to sing is not there. It's been demolished.
Oh, wow.
Coming up the hill towards Brock.
Really? It's demolished. Gone. So interesting.
It's just an example.
Yep.
So day three is called Say Thank You. Every partnership is unique. There's challenges, there's past histories, there's personalities, there's desires, there's communication style, etc. However, there are points of overlap where we are all the same. And one is that we all want to be appreciated.
Yep, for sure.
So you can come from whatever. And I mean, I think that's true in a work environment too. There's all kinds of people coming from. But when you put your hand on somebody's shoulder and say, I really appreciated what you did today and how you interacted. And, you know, I met one of your students and they said that you had a really good class or whatever.
Yeah.
You need to get in the frame.
Oh.
Sorry.
Now you can hear me, but you can't see me.
And they ask these questions. Do you only see the things your partner has done wrong? Do you tell your partner what you need or wish for, which is that idea? Mm-hmm. Do you criticize your partner when they don't do things the way you would? Yes, folding towels. Scan for the positive and not the negative. And avoid the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I love this.
Criticism, one. Defensiveness. Contempt and stonewalling.
Yeah.
That's
great.
They
call them the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah, because things come to an end
pretty
fast.
If that's what you do
it is an apocalyptic type relationship.
Criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling. If you're in a point where you're showing like contempt towards your partner.
And contempt comes out in tone and face gestures.
And just nastiness. I've heard it, like not from you, but
in my tone, I've had a sometimes. Tone. You've had a tone.
But if that's your modus, if that's how you operate,
you're right.
Those four things.
Yes, but we call each other out pretty fast on all of these. But yes. But I really think that the scan for the positive is important because our brains are wired to find negative patterns.
Yes. And I think not only like as a couple, but as like a family practice to scan for the positive.
Well, we with our kids, come home from school, they'd start the whining and we'd say, so tell us two good things that happened today.
Yeah. And then we can talk about a thing you're wondering about.
Yeah.
I liked that better than what's wrong.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering, I'm wondering, what are you wondering about today?
Right.
Like what is kind of going around in your mind? That sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. So day four is give a real compliment. Why did you fall in love with your partner? We have control over how we see each other. So it's the idea of naming specific qualities you love and appreciate about your partner.
It was easy in the, like before our boys, right? When they're first falling in love, it was easy in the first years of our relationship to remember that, to call it out, say it. And then with the craziness of life and stresses, it's easy
hard.
To
and, slip they, away. And so they it talk is about that work. Like completely about, you know, a young couple with their kids, and they talk about how you do that and how you make time.
How many couples
that.
Say that they grew apart or that they don't love each other? And I think that they let this go. Yeah. They didn't work on.
And they're saying to take time every day to notice and hold in mind what you admire about the person you've chosen to weather the slings and arrows of life with, and you will succeed in the long run. I like that idea, because they're not saying, oh, it's all cheery, cheery.
No.
You're weathering the slings and arrows of life. And use the 5-to-1 positive to negative during conflict. Day to day, you need 20-to-1. Be kind. Isn't that interesting? In conflict, 5-to-1. Daily, you need 20-to-1. So you get one negative thing per day that you're allowed to say, and that's it.
And then you must say 20 positives.
Yes.
To compensate.
Be kind when you speak to each other, because impact matters. Sometimes we have to admire that our partner is a survivor. Mm-hmm. That's what you admire about them at that point. Attention, respect, friendship, make time to check in and stay curious. So that's day 4. And then day 5 is a whole day of asking for what you need. Do not accept the myth that we are not worthy of having our needs met and that having needs is bad.
Right.
And I would say that mothers have a harder time with this than fathers.
Yes, I would say so.
100%.
Well, maybe not even mother. Maybe just women have a harder time.
Definitely when you are
If they were raised in the baby boomer Gen X generation, they for sure, in most families, the women have been raised to meet men's needs and to put their own down.
Yes, and I'm reading a very good book right now by Kristen Hanna called The Women, and it's just so interesting. She ends up going to Vietnam to be a nurse, this woman, and she's grown up in the kind of high privilege, this is how you act, and now she's in army boots standing in the mud.
Wow.
It's very interesting story and her perceptions. So it is essential to say what you want and what you need.
So this is the flip side of when you don't ask what you need, and it's called sandbagging or piling up what all your resentments are because they haven't met your needs, and then you ambush your partner with them.
And never use criticism to frame your needs. You don't need to find a problem in order to justify your needs or wants. You have to be honest and clear and proactive.
Yeah, well, that's hard, though, because if you've grown up where you're not allowed to express your needs, then you do frame it negatively by you're not doing this before you say, I need this, rather than just simply.
And the whole idea, I felt this as a teacher and as when I was a principal, I wanted the people
that you supervised.
I supervised to shine for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that to happen. And making sure that conversations have a softened startup. And the whole idea of saying, oh, are you available right now? Is this a good time to talk? And I'm bad at that because you're out of it. And then I'll say something and then I'm like, never mind. And that isn't actually fair, because if I said to you, is this a good time? Then you probably would stop and listen.
Right. Oh, there would be times I would say no, but I remember in our first year of marriage, you would drop me off at work, but I would have built something up and then I would ambush you 10 minutes before we got to the destination, and then we would start hashing it out, and then I'd want to get out of the car and you wouldn't want me to get out of the car.
No, because I have to get something.
And I would say, now's not a good time. We both got to get to work.
Yeah. Reflect on what you need, reframe it to the positive, and know what you need and say it. So that was day 5. And then day 6 is the reach out and touch. And basically say I love you every day and mean it. Passionately kiss for no reason at all.
Give compliments and gifts. Know what turns your partner on and off.
And be physically affectionate even in public. Play and have fun together. Cuddle. Sex is a priority and you talk about your sex life.
Stay good friends.
Weekly romantic dates, romantic vacations, and mindfully
turn toward each other.
So that is the reach out and touch chapter. And I mean, that is so brief compared to what that chapter really talks about, but it gives you the idea. And then day seven is to actually declare a date night. And I kind of think that's more important when you have kids around, because it's kind of like every day.
Every day is a date night. Well, no, we get busy. You get busy with your hobbies. I get busy with my evening thoughts.
Like, are you low?
And like, I mean, a date night doesn't mean going out and spending money.
No.
It's setting time aside to talk and probably do some of the deeper thinking. Asking the big open questions can happen.
Well, the thing is, we share some of the things that we like to do. Like for us, sitting and knitting or reading or something.
Or going for a long walk.
Or walking is something that we do. Yes.
I mean, I remember, we were fortunate. Well, not, we chose to help our children learn how to fall asleep easily. Yes. So we had our evenings to talk and work things through, despite the busyness of having kids.
Little kids.
But.
And I mean, just being careful that you're not living parallel lives that you're actually sharing and sharing more than just your kids.
Right.
Because they go.
I mean, if you think back to our 30 years, there were seasons where we lived parallel lives because of the busyness of jobs.
We were working and back, but we always found an opportunity to come together.
Yeah.
At some point.
At some point.
Like there was not. Yeah. I don't. There,
well, I think before, I think when we started noticing it was happening, we would like put on the brakes and talk and
try to figure something out, because you don't want to take your relationship for granted. Don't shut down opportunities and openness to sensuality and adventure and play and silliness and learning together. And I mean, this is like a whole mindset thing about relationships to me.
Yeah.
Because it's appreciate each other all day long. Say thank you for everything. Like if you really have that mindset, I don't know how your relationship could fall apart. No. And that's basically what they say in the book. Mm-hmm. Like if you follow this, your relationship is not going to fall apart.
Well, it is called a prescription.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and it's better than antibiotics, I can say.
Talk about needs and issues as they come up. Don't stew on them. If you have the daily work of deciding moment by moment that your marriage is worth it and that you choose it again and again. So they have that attitude that if you choose it, it will work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's lots of stories and examples within the book that are, to me, pretty heavy duty, where people would say, wow, I wouldn't stay in that circumstance or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they work it through.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, and I mean, they have trained therapists, and they're
I think that's we've talked about that in our family of when you need to talk to somebody and you need like professional
help. You just need a different perspective.
Yes, and you should get it.
And you should get it. That's what it's there for.
And most of the stories of these couples end with them or begin with them being in some kind of therapy to help them figure stuff out. And I mean, we certainly did that when we were struggling with your mom being like
impacting our marriage,
impacting things. And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked because we did the work.
Yes. And then the thing is, then we had the habit and the know-how. So when things would get rocky, then we could say, oh, let's go back to.
And this. I mean, the thing is, like when you hear like the love prescription, this is not like taking a pill. This is like doing the work.
It's involved. More like a physiotherapist's prescription.
Because there's a lot of exercises to do once you're done. So,
but I mean, for us, we've been married 30 years and we both found lots of
cool stuff in there.
Yeah.
And reminders.
And new things, though, too.
And reminders, right?
And a shift in perspective. And
So I would highly recommend reading The Love Prescription. And
I would second going that recommendation.
On their website and seeing some of the stuff that they have available. And certainly if you really feel like you are not able to do any of those seven things, then I would recommend that you find someone to talk to with your partner.
A relationship therapist. Yeah.
So on February 28th, we're going to come back with Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When the Stakes Are High. And it's Carrie Patterson, Joseph Grenny, Al Switzler, and Ron McMillan.
Okay.
So that's
looking forward to that book as well.
So happy Valentine's Day yesterday, but thanks for joining us.
Happy belated Valentine's Day.
Thanks for joining us for The Love Prescription, 7 days to more intimacy, connection, and joy on Home for Fullness.
Good night.